Good morning. Thank the Lord for the opportunity to be here today. The Lord's been talking to me about some scriptures over in Hebrews, and I would appreciate your prayers. Let's go to Hebrews 11 and the 13th verse. Hebrews is the faith chapter, Hebrews 11, And you can read about all sorts of heroes that did all sorts of things and endured all sorts of things and accomplished all sorts of things. And they did it because they had faith. And it says that they died in faith. And what that means is that there were things that they believed in, and unlike many people that might make an investment in business and they do it because they want to see a return at a later point in their life, these people made an investment and never saw the return in their lifetime. Not the kind that they, not a physical, a temporal return. It was things that God had promised to them. Think about what God said to Abraham. He said, "This is, if you'll do this, if you'll live for me, I'll make your sand, your seed as the sand of the sea." And it was important to Abraham. I don't think it was something that God wouldn't have fed some sort of an ego trip. But it was important to Abraham because it was important to God. It was something that God was doing and Abraham was on board with it. It was something that he wanted God's way. But it was something that he wasn't going to see. Have you ever thought about that? How I think that many times the reason that we don't really understand that way of thinking, being buried in the same sepulcher as our fathers and our posterity being this and that and the Lord doing this and keeping, it's because we're too focused, partly on the here and now. It's when we put in an investment, we want to see a return in our lifetime. We want to get the results for ourselves. And really, I think that maybe an adjustment in our thinking is in order. Just think about an investment financially. How motivated would you be to make an investment financially if you knew you'd never get to see it, but your children would? Would you be as motivated to do it if you knew your children would enjoy it, but you'd never see a penny of it? Maybe we need to be more that way. But so I would like to pick this up in the 13th verse. It says, "These all died in faith, all of these heroes, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them and embraced them and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth." That was the mindset that they had. They didn't think that they had any real stake in this world, and that's not where they put their focus. They said, "We're just here. We're sojourning here." Now, when we think about Abraham sojourning, a lot of times we just think, "Well, it was because God called him to go out of one land into another one, and so he was sojourning in this land." Well, Abraham was called the friend of God. And he wasn't just doing this for literal temporal reasons. Everything that he did was part of the way that he worshiped God. They worshiped God in much more literal way than you and I do. It was with Abraham that God initiated circumcision. And all of the physical things and the sacrifices that they made, the land, the physical land, all of that had great significance to Abraham. But yet, He was sojourning, but yet he was sojourning in the land that the Lord promised, said, your seed's going to possess this. You're going to have to, your seed is going to be taken into Egypt and not going to see this for 400 years, and then they're going to return. But I believe that the Lord was so real to Abraham that he helped him to realize that what we're really looking for down in history is the Messiah. And from the Messiah, the land that everybody's going to enjoy. Your seed is going to possess the gates of their enemies. I think that Abraham had a vision of that, and many of the patriarchs did. So it says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. So not citizens really of the earth, not a stake in the earth, but that they're citizens of something else. So it says, for they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. Or in other words, if they would have really cared, if they would have been focused on the country and said, this is where I'm a citizen, I'm actually a citizen of Canaan or of Ur or wherever it was, they could have had a stake there. They could have been accepted there. They could have had a certain measure of fulfillment there. But that's not what they chose. They gave that up. See, because God said, get out of that. Get out of your land and go to a land that I will show you. And so Abraham's traveling and really said he didn't know where he was going. All that he knew was that he was following God. It was like Aunt Bev was talking about a while ago. I want you to go on this path. And I don't know where you're going, but you know that the Lord's leading you. That's what Abraham was doing. He said, so it says, but now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. You ever wondered why God didn't just create us all already in heaven? Why God has our existence and He created us all of us uniquely, and 99 point however many nines you want to put behind it, percent of our existence is eternal. Tiny, tiny fraction of our existence is in this literal temporal world. You could almost say infinitely less than 1%. Because eternity is infinite. But God put us here deliberately, and he put us here for, you know, an average of 70, 80, 90 years, something like that. And we're here. And he put a veil between here and eternity, where even though almost all of our existence is eternal, we're very focused on this life because that's all we can see. And yet God said, I'm going to put you here, but you're a pilgrim and you're a stranger here on the earth. And so that's what I'd like to talk about this morning. Let me ask you, why don't we teach? You might say, well, this is so obvious. Why don't we teach that it's okay, that abortion's okay? What about euthanasia? You know what euthanasia is? Maybe a few here don't. Euthanasia is the practice of people, a lot of times government assisted, get older, elderly, and decide to end their life. And basically the government terminates people's lives that they feel are not as useful as they used to be. Basically, when they get old and can't do what they used to do, well, let's get them off the scene and let's have people that are more productive. Why is that wrong? It is wrong. Not trying to tell you it's not wrong, but why is it wrong? Why is abortion wrong? You know that there are biblical principles. The Bible doesn't really say much at all about the literal practice of abortion. But the Bible has principles that we use to govern our lives. You know, a lot of times, I'm going to talk about abortion for a little bit. Abortion takes away the life of a baby before it ever gets to experience anything. They don't have any kind of a life. They don't have any kind of a fulfillment of anything. It takes that away and removes them from the earth before they really even have a chance to experience it. Do you know that a lot of the babies that get aborted would grow up in abusive homes? Do you know that? And if they were allowed to live, they would see a lot of pain and a lot of suffering, a lot of abuse, because that's what sinful humans many times do. That's a lot of families in the world are families where there's dysfunctionality and abuse. And so if you try to make the argument that abortion's wrong because it creates a lot of pain for the baby and it's very painful, that's all true, but that's not really why abortion's wrong. The fact is that if you're going to make the argument that abortion's wrong just simply because it's cruel to the baby to put an end to them like that, to kill them and do that, the truth is that it's actually probably less pain than a lot of those babies would experience if you let them live. But the reason that abortion is wrong is because that God didn't just create us in eternity. He didn't create us to where we're just automatically in heaven. You know that taking your own life, that suicide is the same concept? If you get to where you say, you know, I'm done. I'm done living my own life. I'm done being here. I just want to terminate it. I don't believe that the Lord's pleased with that. You know why? It's because the Lord has plans. He has plans for us. That's the reason why we're here. He didn't put us here just to live until we got tired of living. He put us here because we have a distinct purpose. Every one of us. The babies that get aborted, God has a distinct purpose for everybody. And yes, He allows the abortion, and He allows people to take their own life, but that doesn't mean He didn't have a purpose for those people. Why, you know, there's been different groups, different movements. I'm thinking of one in particular. You've heard of the Jim Jones cult that was in the, I think it was about 1980, something like that. It was back, I don't know, 40, 50 years ago. And they got to the point where they decided, all of us that are in this group, they formed this utopia, so they thought, and it got a little too hot for them up here in the United States, so I think they moved all down to South America, where they could do what they wanted to do and live the kind of lives they wanted to live without getting in trouble for it. So they were down there, and after a while, I think there was some pressure on them down there too, but after, I'm not sure, but they decided after a while, we're all going to drink this Kool-Aid, and we're all going to go to heaven together. We're all going to be in heaven together. And so something like 900 of them, I think it was like 929 of them, drank this Kool-Aid. Men, women, children, babies, they drank this Kool-Aid and it had cyanide in it. And they died. They all died, almost all of them. There were like a couple survivors. A couple of them escaped and didn't drink the Kool-Aid because they didn't want to. And then a couple of them, I think, were on a trip somewhere and they didn't. But almost everybody in that group died. I don't believe that group taught the gospel. But what would happen If we decided, you know what? We've got everything figured out. We're living as close to God as we can live. It's just time to go to heaven. So let's just all drink the Kool-Aid and we're all going to go to heaven and we're going to be with the Lord. Do you know there's a reason why we're here in the first place? This is pretty basic. But there's a reason why we can't just go out of here. And we might say, well, I'm just ready to go. You know, the world's getting worse and worse. I'm just ready to go. The Lord said, "Ye are the light of the world." So if the light doesn't shine because we all wanted to go to heaven, and so there's no light here, where's the light? Where is it going to be? In the earth. The Lord took us and He put us here, and we've got a purpose that we're supposed to fulfill for the Lord. And then we've got eternity, but right now it's not then. We have a life to live for the Lord. So I want to look at that just a little bit. Get a couple more scriptures about pilgrims and strangers. We won't turn there, but 1 Peter 2 and 11 says, "Dearly beloved, I beseech you as what? Strangers and pilgrims. Abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul." And then if you go to the previous chapter, he says something like it again. 1 Peter 1 and 17, he said, If you call on the Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. Or in service, in the knowledge that the Lord is going to, that we're going to give an account of how we live the time that we're here. So he said, "For as much as you know that you are not redeemed with corruptible things as silver and gold, from your vain conversation received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot." I'd like us to get a hold of the vision this morning that Abraham and all those heroes of faith had. In Hebrews 13 and 13 it says, "Let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come." What is wrong? I'll ask you another question here. What is wrong with teaching that you can live, that since you're on the earth, you can do whatever you want so long as it's not a sin? You just live however you want to. God doesn't care about how you live just so long as it's not sin. Play all the games you want. Do all the fun stuff you want. Enjoy life as much as you possibly can. Get all you can. Keep all you can. Live life to the fullest. Follow your heart. You know, that's what a lot of people say. Follow your heart. Just do whatever your heart finds to do. You do it. And you're only young once. You only live once. You hear all of those things. Just life's too short to fill in the blank. Whatever. Life's too short to not. There's a car dealership over here. Says life's too short to drive a cheap car. And the thought there is that if you drive all your life with a car that's not the car you want, and then you die, then you've wasted your whole existence. But we're pilgrims and strangers. We don't live for the here and now. Or we shouldn't. "Let us pass the time of your sojourning here in fear." You know, Ecclesiastes says it like this. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 11 and 9, "Rejoice, young man, in thy youth, and let the high heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment." And he says again, in 12 and 14 of Ecclesiastes, "For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil." There's something similar in the New Testament. In 2 Corinthians 5 and 10, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body, according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad." This is the thought that I would like us to get a hold of. God could have created us to be right there in heaven with him from the get-go. He could have made us where that's the life that we have. And we don't have this here. But he didn't do that. God created us and put us here for a few short years. Some people don't live that long. Some people live to be over 100. But regardless, it's all relatively very short. But the point is that he put us here. And that he didn't just put us there. We can terminate our life quickly. We can terminate other people's lives. But the value of human life is enormous. Because it's what God uses for his plan, for his gospel work. He could have made us all angels in heaven. But he made us humans with free choice, free will. He wanted us to serve him because we want to. He wanted us to be able to serve him in the face of temptations. He wanted us to see all the things that we could do and still choose to live for him. He wanted us to have opportunities to live selfishly and still choose to live for him. There are people that succeed that are very successful in life. I'll just tell you, as Americans here, we have so much prosperity. And we have, in America, we have the concept of, we have what's called the American dream. Whatever you want to be, if you really want it bad enough, you can do it. You want to be a rocket scientist? You want to be a chemist? You want to be a biologist? You can do that here in America. It's not that hard to do. You can follow your dreams. You want to be a commercial pilot. You want to be a race car driver. You can do those things. And you can make a good salary, work a certain number of years, 30, 40 years, and then you should have enough to where you can retire. And then after that, you don't have to work anymore because what you've saved from your career should be, if you did it right, should be enough to last you until you die and then hand something off to the next generation. And that actually works really well here in America. It works. You can go. You can find the job that you want. You can make a good living. You can retire with money in the bank and good investments and live the rest of your life. But you know that in all of that, and that this is what Ecclesiastes said, do the things humans do. Go do things that God doesn't expect us to live a life that's totally non-earthly. He wants us to interact with our families. He wants us to behold his creation. He wants us to do things like go on camping trips and play games with our children and sit around campfires and do all those things. He wants us to enjoy life. But the whole time that we're doing it, he wants us to do it with the mindset that we're pilgrims. We're strangers. We don't really belong here. Just because I have the legal right, and because fate has put it in my lap to be able, let's say I've made a fortune, been able to set myself up. Do you know I have the legal right to do whatever I want with that? I can live the whole rest of my life in ease if I want to. like the rich man in the Bible decided he was going to do. But God has a mindset that he wants us to have. I'm a pilgrim and I'm a stranger. He wants us to say, Lord, how do you want me, whatever position I'm in, we have people here from in different age groups. We have small children. We have people here in their 20s. We have people here in their 30s, 60s, 70s. We have people from all different kinds of age groups, and we're in different positions. We have people in school. We have people that aren't old enough to go to school. We have people here. I'm in the middle of my career. I've got nearly a generation of working behind me, but I still have nearly about a generation of in front of me too, about in the middle of it. We have people here that are retired or kind of getting there. Do you know that God has a plan for every one of us in every place that we're in? Where even though we're doing human things, we work for a living, we eat, we experience life, its joys and its sorrows, but yet in all of that, we're pilgrims and strangers here because we're citizens of another country. So what are we doing with this little bit of life that the Lord gave us? This little sojourning, this little time that we have here on this planet, what are we doing? How are we living it? You know, I really believe, and this is what the scriptures teach, that one of these days I will stand before the Lord, and you will too. And he's going to spread your life out. He's going to roll it out like a map. And he's going to look at it and he's going to say, why did you do this? And why did you do this? Not in condemnation, but he's going to examine it. And he's not going to have to ask why, but it's going to be examined. We're going to have to give an account for the things that we did. You know, I'm just going to say this. If we live our life and get all set up, and then we go and we fulfill ourselves, and that's what we do, and we spend all of our time making sure that everything is perfect for us, and that we have all the enjoyments, and we get to fulfill everything on our bucket list, and all of that, and then we get to the end, I'm afraid that God's going to say, you know, you had all of eternity to look forward to do all the things, to have all the good times and all of the enjoyment and all of the fulfillment. What did you do for me? You didn't really, it was just a little bit, just a tiny little bit of your life, but what did you do with it? Eat it all up in collecting coins? You know what I'm saying? We can do so many things. And people get so wrapped up in this hobby and that pursuit. And, you know, and they'll have this bucket list. And I've seen people have said, okay, this is what I'm going to do before I die. I want to make sure I do this. And it's something that's quite grand. And it's impressive. And I think, well, yeah, that's something. But I don't think the Lord would want me to do that. It's a waste of time. So I don't want us to get in bondage at all. But you know, the Lord wants us to live for Him. And you know, we don't even have to wait for a call to do a lot of the stuff. I think there's some things you've got to wait for a call, but the scripture says, as you have opportunity, do good unto all men. We are living here in a state of trial or probation. And we're going to be called into judgment by how we live. I want to look at how Paul put this, how Paul looked at his life. First, let's go to Philippians, the first chapter. Philippians 1 and 21. He said, for to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. You know, he had been through a lot already at this point. And I believe, yeah, he was already in prison. Paul was already in prison at this point. Because I think he had just got done saying that the things that have happened for unto me have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel, so that people are more bold to speak because of my bonds. He said, but if I live in the flesh, this is the fruit of my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I wot not. I don't believe that he meant I have a choice and I just haven't made up my mind yet. He said, I don't have the judgment to know what's best here. I don't know if it was left up to me, I don't know what I'd pick. I'm almost saying, in other words, the Lord knows what's best here. For I am in a strait betwixt two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to abide in the flesh is more needful for you. And having this confidence, I know that I shall abide and continue with you all for your furtherance and joy of faith. So he recognized he wasn't bemoaning the fact. He didn't say, now looky here, I was a ruler. I'm guessing that when he was a ruler of the Jews, that he was able to do a whole lot more selfish stuff in his life. He probably had some wealth and probably and all that. He was probably able to live a life that was more closer to what his flesh wanted. But when he followed Jesus, the Lord took him on a path that had shipwrecks in it and it had suffering, and he was beaten and he was betrayed, and people that used to be his friends, now he had to watch out for them, make sure they didn't kill him. You know that he had acquaintances that had gone back for many years there in the synagogue and all the rulers, and he had to find a completely new set of acquaintances. And then he probably got to the place where he was tempted to think, I just want to go to heaven. I'm done. I just want to go. I want to be with the Lord. I'm done. But he recognized that the Lord had a mission for him. And even when he was in prison, he didn't say, well, that's it. That's the end. I'm thrown in prison now. The only thing left is for me to get my head chopped off. And I wish it'd hurry up and happen because I just want to go to heaven and I'm done. But he said, you know what? The Lord put me here and he gave me a gift and he gave me a ministry of imparting the gospel to the Gentiles. And even though I'm in prison, it's still my gift. The Lord wants me to do this. And so he said, I'd like to depart and be with the Lord, but I realize that it's more needful for me to stay here. And I believe that he was saying, this is the Lord's will. I don't think it's the Lord's will for me to die yet. I think it's the Lord's will for me to stay here a while longer. But you know, later he wrote to Timothy. In 2 Timothy 4 and 6, he said, for I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. You know, each one of us have a course. And we have things that the Lord wants us to accomplish for him. He puts people in our lives that he wants us to speak to. He wants us to help. He has situations that he wants us to influence. He has all kinds of things that he wants us to do. And that's part of our course. He said, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit. In Hebrews 11, we won't turn there, but it said that people stopped the mouths of lions, they quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, all kinds of things that they did. But it said, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. That's what it said. They were pilgrims and strangers. And it said they were stoned. They were sawn asunder. You know, Paul wasn't, or whoever wrote the book of Hebrews, wasn't just pulling stuff out of his hat. You know, I imagine this happened. You know what happened? You know, that's exactly what happened to the prophet Isaiah, according to history. Isaiah wrote one of the, probably my favorite book of the Old Testament, the book of Isaiah. So beautiful. It's poetic. It's prophetic. It's got so much information, so much light concerning Jesus, the Messiah, the gospel dispensation. He prophesied, Isaiah prophesied during four different kings. I think that his ministry spanned over 70 years. He was a very old prophet. But at the end of it all, you know what happened? He made the king of Ahaz mad. And so, I think it was Ahaz. Ahaz had him put inside a hollow log, and then they sawed the log in half. That's what happened to King. That's what happened to the prophet Isaiah. And yet, he did everything that he did because he was a pilgrim and a stranger. He was focused on pleasing the Lord. Do you know that John was the only disciple to die of old age? All of the others, Peter, Thomas, all of them, Philip, they were martyrs, all of them, except John. William Tyndale was burned at the stake in the 1500s for translating the Bible into English. These people, you can't, if you're not a pilgrim and a stranger, if you don't have that mentality, it's going to be hard to do exactly what the Lord wants you to do and not water it down if you consider yourself to be a true citizen of this earth. I just want to say to you this morning that I am desperate to meet God in peace. My life is short. This time is so short. It's nothing. It's just nothing in the context of eternity. Revelation 2 and 8. And I'll say this also. We ask questions. I've heard that this is the hardest question that we have to face. Is that why does God allow evil? Some of these hard questions, like why does God allow suffering? Why does He allow pain and all of that? Some of those questions cannot be explained without explaining them in the light of eternity. There are things that don't make sense and they don't square if you just try to answer them in the context of this existence. But when you add eternity in there, it squares the equation. It works out. It makes everything work. Part of it, I don't even know. I can't see it. But I'd like to talk about it a little bit, about eternity. First, let's read Revelation 2 and 8. And unto the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these things saith the first and the last, which was dead and is alive. I know thy works, and tribulation, and poverty, but thou art rich. And I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you in prison, that you may be tried. And you know what? You can blame all that on the devil, but you know the Lord allows it. The Lord allows us to have these things to happen. The devil doesn't have the Lord's hands tied. The devil can't do anything without the Lord allowing it, but the Lord allows it. The Lord allowed. Isaiah did not sin, and that's why he got put to death like he did. Jeremiah didn't sin. These people had some very rough things happen to them, but you know how long they've been in eternity? Isaiah lived maybe 90, 95 years old. But Isaiah's been in eternity for over 2,500 years. it kind of puts, and he just got started. And it puts things into perspective a little bit. He said, "Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you in prison, that ye may be tried. And ye shall have tribulation 10 days. I think that if you look at this, I don't think that this meant 10 literal days. I think it's a symbolic period. You're going to have tribulation for a while. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life." And in the 14th chapter of Revelation, I'd like to look at some scriptures in Revelation. We'll just spend the rest of our time here, Lord willing. In the 14th chapter of Revelation, 14 and 13, it says, "And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, Write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them." There's a lot of things you can get from this verse. Their labors. See, God puts us here, and He gives us tasks, and they belong to us. They don't belong to anybody else. The things that the Lord gives to me, they don't belong to you. And the Lord, things the Lord gives you do not belong to me. There are people that you can touch that I cannot touch, and vice versa. There are situations that I can influence that you cannot influence. And so it's up to me to do those things. And if I shirk my responsibility, the Lord is well able to raise somebody else up to do it. But it doesn't negate or take away the responsibility that I have. He said, "Blessed are the dead that die in the Lord, that die in the Lord, that fulfilled what the Lord gave them to do. And now their work is finished. Everything that they did, the Lord says, that's enough. It's done. They may rest from your labors." That means they don't have any of those responsibilities, any of those trials, any of the tribulations anymore. And their works do follow them. I remember thinking of this verse when I was at my Uncle Philip's graveside. And I looked, and Brother Marvin Moles was preaching the graveside service. And he looked toward the casket and he said, "Brother Philip's work is finished. It's done." And we think, you know, we can think somebody like that, he was 61 years old when he died. And we can think, well, what a shame. He died and he was still healthy and he had so much life left that he could have enjoyed and all that. But it's just because we can't see the other side. We can't see what he's doing in eternity. We can't see the crown. We can't see the robe. We can't see any of that. And all we think about is the here and now. But may the Lord help us to put things into perspective and live in the light of eternity. Live with the mindset of eternity's coming and what it is. And get a vision. Help, ask the Lord to help us to put a vision of eternity into our hearts where we can live every day with it in focus. He said, "And their works do follow them." I believe that the things that we do are going to have an effect on what the Lord says about them in eternity. And what the Lord, what we get to reap from it. I don't know what it's going to be like there. Let's go ahead and turn to Revelation, the 21st chapter. I'd like to talk about heaven just a little bit. "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven, the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. All of the things that God allowed us to go through and do and experience in this life, there won't be there. No crying, no pain, no suffering, no tribulation, no temptation. We're going to be there right there with God. God's going to dwell with us. We'll be able to see Jesus face to face. All of the people that we knew here that are faithful, one by one as they pass to the other side, it leaves a hole in our hearts. And when we get over there, we're going to be reunited with all of those people. We're going to be able to know the whys of life. We're going to be able to understand. I believe, I think Brother Clifford Cole said it'll take an eternity to praise Him. Because we're going to have the understanding of all the things that we didn't understand. And the things that didn't make sense. And the things that we just said, well, I'm just going to have to trust God that His way is best. And I don't know what He's doing right now, but I'm going to know someday. We're going to know those things. And see the magnificent plan. And I think of all the magnificence of the things that we see here. Human cells, the complexity of them, the human eyeball, the distance of the stars and all of the things that are so incredible to us. The way a fox can jump up in the air, go 6 feet down into snow and grab a mouse just because he heard it from up top. All of the incredible things that the Lord has created. I believe that He's put the same amount of creativity and wonder, the unlimited grandeur, splendor, we're going to have that up there, but without all the problems, without the evil, without the temptation. And it's because we will be, that's where we're citizens of. When we get saved, when we're a child of God, we are a citizen of the New Jerusalem. And we get to experience a little bit of it down here, but when we get there, we're going to experience all of it. Everything that the Lord has prepared, Scripture said, eye has not seen nor ear heard the things that God has prepared for them that love Him. And I want so bad, I'll say it again, I am desperate to meet God at the end of my life in peace. Revelation 21, and we'll skip down just a little bit in verse 9. If you'll have patience and like to read, just read down through here a little bit. And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show you thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God, and her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal, and had a wall great and high, and had 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and names written thereon, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Maybe we won't read all of this, but it keeps talking about it. It said that the building of the wall of it was of jasper. The city was pure gold, like unto clear glass. Beautiful descriptions here. In the 22nd verse, it says, and I saw no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it. And the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honor into it. And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there. And they shall bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. And there shall no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie. But they are they which are written in the Lamb's book of life. And in the 22nd chapter, it says, and he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, was there the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits, and there and yielded her fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it. And his servants shall serve him, and they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. And there shall be no night there, and they need no candle, neither light of the sun. For the Lord God giveth them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. I don't know about you, but I want to go there. You know, we can think of this life as being so real, and we get so focused on it, and there's so much that demands our attention. But you know, you and I, we're going, if we stay faithful, we will be here. We will be at the, do you believe that? This is something that matters to you. We're going to be in this place. It seems so far off and it seems so unreal, but we're going to be there if we're faithful to the Lord. If we will live, if we will, I'll tell you what we've got to do to get there. We've got to be citizens of there. We've got to have a passport there before we get there. That means that we've got to give up our citizenship here on this earth and all of the earthly things, the things that are of the earth and of the prince of the power of the air. We've got to give those things up. And we've got to live as citizens, as strangers and pilgrims here, because we're going to that other place. May the Lord help each one of us this morning. This is just the thoughts that the Lord's been talking to me about this week, and I thought it would be right to share them with you this morning. You pray for me. I want to be faithful.